Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The one thing all good leaders need. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca. Today is June the 3rd, and we have a leadership article for you. It's called Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. And I'm happy to have Peter join me in the studio.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Rebecca. Nice to be here.
Peter, it's great to have you on the program. Now, today we're going to be talking about leadership and what makes a good leader. And I'd like to start by asking you, Peter, can you tell me one leader, either from history or the present, that you admire and why?
Sure. For me, it would have to be Martin Luther King Jr., the great American civil rights leader of the 1960s, who achieved so much for Black Americans in terms of basic rights, and doing it in a way that was very admirable, at least to me personally.
Martin Luther King Jr., what is one characteristic or trait that Dr. King had that you think made him such an amazing, incredible leader?
Well, definitely his approach to changing society through nonviolent resistance to injustice. Mm. He's famous for not encouraging people to riot, not trying to organize a military resistance of some sort, but instead to have people simply protest in the streets. If they got arrested, they got arrested. And he was willing to be put in jail for being arrested for, possibly defying an unjust law, but that he met his enemies with love. He opposed injustice. He didn't just roll over under it, as we sometimes say, but he did not meet injustice with violence. He did not meet injustice with destruction, as is often the way that humans have responded to injustice, is with violence.
Yes. Well, that's a wonderful example. And I like to throw in my example. I would say one leader I greatly admire is Winston Churchill.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of the UK during World War II and also after post-World War II. And I think the reason that I admire Churchill so much is because he inspired hope. He inspired hope. Like when he became prime minister, it was in May of 1940. And it was in a time when the Allies were fighting Hitler. They were fighting Hitler and Axis powers. And the Allies were doing very, very poorly. In fact, France was about to be defeated. And it was a really, really bad time in the UK, but he was able to inspire hope and help lead the UK, lead the Allies to victory in World War II. So I think I greatly admire him. And one trait that I really love about Mr. Churchill was his indomitable spirit, his never give up spirit, his tenacity. And I think that made him the right leader for that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think what I'm trying to say is, we all might admire different leaders. And different leaders, there might be certain parallels between different leaders. They might share some certain traits. But what we'll talk about in today's article is that leaders come in all shapes and sizes. There's leadership. You could be a good leader and you can be very, very different from another leader. But there is one thing that all good leaders need if they want to be a good leader. And we will be exploring what that one thing is. So let's get into the first reading for today.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. This may be the only trait a good leader needs. For decades, MBA programs, leadership trainings, and consultancies have told us that effective leaders share a set of essential competencies. You know the lists: empathy, strategic vision, humility, charisma, psychological safety, communication skills. These ideas get repeated in boardrooms and promised in executive education programs. But if these competencies were truly essential, then the leaders we most admire should have them. The truth is, they often don't. I've spent the past 15 years running a secret dining experience called the Influencer's Dinner. We've hosted close to 4,000 Olympians, Nobel laureates, executives, astronauts, Grammy-winning artists, Oscar-winning directors, and even the occasional prime minister or princess. And what became clear, sitting across the table from these leaders, is that while all of them were wildly effective, there was no commonality in their skills. Some were quiet, others loud. Some thrived on collaboration. Others preferred making decisions on their own. Yet each led organizations, movements, or creative projects that shaped the world. Look at the most impactful leaders you know, and you see the same thing. Elon Musk is not known for humility or building consensus. Steve Jobs was not exactly famous for psychological safety, yet both are considered among the most effective leaders of our time. What explains it?
We start our article talking about some common assumptions about leadership. And Peter, what are some of these assumptions that we hear all the time?
Right. Well, these assumptions, which the author refers to as essential competencies. A competency is just a fancy word for a skill that you need to do a particular job. If you want to teach English, for example, you need to be competent and knowledgeable in the language of English. That's a competency for you. So his point is that leaders have these essential competencies, or at least there's this idea out there that they have these essential competencies, such as empathy, strategic vision, humility, charisma, which is a sort of movie star-like quality that makes people just naturally attracted to you and excited by you, and it's not really something you can do, it's just a gift you have. These sorts of things are thought to be things that leaders need to have.
Yes, and these, what you just explained, the competencies. The competency is a really good word to learn because this is a word we often use in management, especially by human resources professionals. So HR professionals, they will say, does that candidate have the right competencies? And basically, a competency is just the skill you need to do that job. A competency, big fancy word meaning skill to do a job, used often in HR. Well, Peter, you explained a lot of these, but there is one I really want to get to. I think it's really, really, really important. It's psychological safety. Now, we know what safety is. We know what it feels like to feel safe. But what is psychological safety?
Right. Psychological safety is a sort of a recent term in the work environment. It means feeling safe to express yourself, to express an opinion that may go against what your boss is saying, may go against what your other colleagues are saying. It's not about, you know, just having the freedom to start arguments, but the freedom to disagree. And in work environments, there are workplaces where there is not that sense of psychological safety, where people feel intimidated, feel like it's not safe to disagree with the boss. And so there's this expression in English, walking around on eggshells. Everyone is very, very careful and not truly expressive of what they really think or say because they think it'll get them in trouble.
Yes. So psychological safety, you feel safe to express what you really feel without negative consequences. This is a really important concept, like whether at work or at home, you want to feel psychological safety. You don't want to walk on eggshells, like you just said. And so we often hear, so here it goes on to say, these ideas get repeated in boardrooms and promised in executive education programs. So boardrooms, that's basically just a big fancy name for a meeting room in the company. Why is it called a boardroom? Mm-hmm. Because the board of directors might meet there.
Exactly.
So that's called a boardroom.
Yeah.
And then executive education, this is basically after you work for some years and then perhaps you take on a EMBA, for example, like you're working and also getting more education at the same time. And your classmates are like you. They're all, most of them are professionals. They're not students. They're professionals going for more education. So that's the executive education programs. But the author says that if this was true, then the leaders that we admire should have these traits. But what is the fact?
Well, the fact is, the truth is, the author says, they often don't have these traits, strategic vision, humility, charisma. And he reveals that he has been involved in this secret dining experience for the past 15 years called the Influencers Dinner, which apparently hosts leaders in various fields, sports, the arts, business, science. It says that they've hosted Olympians, which is to say people who've participated in the Olympic Games, mm-hmm. Nobel laureates. A laureate is a word for someone who has won something or been honored in some way. In this case, they've been honored with the Nobel Prize, one of the highest, you know, probably the highest civilian honors that you can get. And so the author has been involved in these dinners and met 4,000, he says, close to 4,000 leaders from these various fields, and has not found that they all have that list of competencies that he mentioned earlier.
Yes, and this whole idea of the influencers' dinner is actually very, very fascinating. And it's run by the author of today's article, John Levy. Who is John Levy? John Levy, he is a behavioral scientist. So he studies human behavior. He is also a best-selling author who's written books from like all these influencers' dinners that he's had. He's actually wrote books based on his observations from these dinners. So over 15 years ago, he started this dinner. And then this influencer's dinner, how does it work? It's actually very interesting. So what he has is he invites 12 guests to his house. And these 12 guests are just like this long list that we just read. They're basically really distinguished, incredible people from many different fields. And when these people come to this dinner, they actually cook together.
Oh, really?
They cook together. And when they're cooking, they're not allowed to talk about what they do.
Uh-huh.
So basically, it's a surprise. The person next to you has no idea what you do.
Uh-huh.
So it's basically just, you're just cooking together, talking to each other, making small talk, and maybe trying to deepen your talk. But you're not talking about what you do for your career. But once they start eating, then you can guess what the people around you, what is their occupation?
Mm.
And then they'll find out, what do these people do? So this is a way of bringing incredible people together and trying to just having free, interesting conversations and not trying to be tainted by that person's job title or success.
Yeah.
It's a really, really interesting concept. And been running this for over 15 years. Very, very interesting. And then so basically the conclusion, his conclusion from these dinners was what, Peter?
Yeah, his conclusion was that there is no commonality in the skills of these various leaders, who all of whom were, as he says, wildly effective. These weren't just ordinary people. These were people who had really accomplished something in their respective fields, and yet there was no commonality. There was no shared thing that they had in their skills. Some were quiet. Others were loud. Some thrived, you know, benefited, flourished on collaboration, working with others. Others preferred to make decisions on their own, but each led organizations, movements, or creative projects that shaped the world despite not all having those essential competencies.
Yes. So what you found from these dinners was basically leaders really do come in all shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
Like you can be a great leader and not have the required skills that we all think you're supposed to have. So that was his discovery. And then he goes on to say, look at the most impactful leaders, the leaders that are making the most impact. If you're making impact, you're basically making the most influence. So the impactful leaders, you know, and then here we have one example, Elon Musk. Now, Elon Musk is on almost many, many, many lists for being a visionary, for being a pioneer. I'm not sure if he should make it on the list for being a leader. Like, he's impactful for sure, but I'm not sure how people in Tesla or SpaceX or, you know, his company XAI, like how they feel about him. But he's definitely on those lists for impactful leaders. And he's not known for humility or building consensus. Okay, the word consensus, Peter, what does consensus mean?
Right. Consensus just means that everyone agrees on the plan of action, on the attitude that we're all going to have. You know, you want to have consensus in a group so that everyone's focused on the same goal, so that we're all working towards that same goal and we're all, you know, on the same page, as we sometimes say. There can be situations where it's good to have more diversity of opinion, but at the end of the day, you benefit more from having consensus than from everyone still being in a state of sort of disagreement and all carrying their own individual opinions.
Right. So when you have consensus, you arrive to something that everybody can agree. And you can take that this really, really far. Like, for example, there's a political organization, ASEAN, political grouping of countries in Southeast Asia, like Thailand, Vietnam, many of the Southeast Asian countries, they are in a grouping called ASEAN. And in ASEAN, they're very, very famous in that all the countries have to agree to a decision before any action can be taken. Can you imagine that?
Consensus.
The members of ASEAN, every single country, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, all of them, I'm probably missing a couple countries, but all of them have to agree to that decision before anything gets done. So, I mean, it's wonderful in that, but whether you're a big country or you're a small country, everybody's opinion, everybody's stance is taken into consideration. But can you imagine if you're always trying to build consensus, how slow things can move?
Oh, yeah. No, because that's always the great strike against consensus building, is because it's not easy.
Yeah. That's basically taking consensus to an extreme.
Yeah.
But I think Elon Musk is on the opposite end of the spectrum, right? I think he's very confident in his own abilities and his very high IQ. I don't think he arrives at any consensus. It's basically he's the king.
Yeah.
He decides. But because he has been so brilliant that most of the time his board will go along with it because he's so brilliant in thinking up the next technology, the next product, the next thing. He's so brilliant, they just let him do it. And then we have another example here. We have the example of Steve Jobs, and he's not known to take disagreement very well, right? So here it says he's not known for psychological safety. Well, so what do these leaders have in common? Friends, let's get into our next reading and let's talk about the psychology of followers.
The psychology of following. People follow for one main reason. We don't relate to the present. We relate to the future we believe we have. Think back to high school. On Friday afternoons at 1 p.m., we were still stuck in class, but felt excited because the weekend was ahead. On Sunday nights at 6 p.m., we were free, but anxious, already anticipating Monday. The way we feel about now depends on what we think tomorrow will look like. This is exactly how we respond to leaders. When we interact with someone who makes us feel there's a better future ahead, we follow them. We don't need to like them. We can even dislike them. But if they make us believe tomorrow will be better, we'll follow and often forgive their flaws.
Peter, here, let's talk about the followers, because in English, we have an old idiom. I'm not sure if it's still culturally appropriate. We say it can't be all chiefs, but no Indians. This is an old term that Indians here, they're talking about the Aboriginal people in North America. Old term is Indians. Now, we don't say American Indians now. We just say the indigenous peoples.
Yeah, or Native Americans.
Or the Native Americans. Mm. These are better terms. But a very old idiom is, it can't be all chiefs and no Indians, meaning if you don't have anybody following you, then you're not a leader.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a lot of people doing the work of following.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the followers for a second. Why do people follow a leader, Peter?
People follow a leader because, according to the article, they relate to the future that they believe they have. You, me, everyone. We don't relate to the present. I mean, we're aware of the present, of course, but we relate to, we are driven by, we are inspired by the future we believe we have. And the author gives the example of back in our high school days, we were much more positive, in a better attitude Friday afternoons, because we knew that school was almost done and we'd have the weekend ahead. But on Sunday nights, the night before we're due to go back to school, even though in the present moment on the Sunday evening, we're free, we're not in school, we're still at home, but we know that what's coming, we know that our future is Monday morning when we go back to school. And so our mood is less positive at that moment. And that's, you know, a general principle about the way we respond to our circumstances that relates to why we follow this leader and not that leader.
Yeah, so basically how you're feeling at this moment is influenced by what you believe your future will be like, right?
Right.
So if you have something to look forward to, there are things that make you happy that are coming up, you're much happier, right? Like, for example, right before a vacation. And then I think this example of Friday afternoon and Sunday nights, it's just the same for adults, right?
Like, sure.
I mean, some of us dread, like, Sunday nights, we're really feeling sad because we're dreading coming to work on Monday.
Right? Exactly.
So this is very normal.
Even though we're not at work at the moment on Sunday night, you know, the present moment, we, you know, really don't have any reason to be anxious, but we are anxious because we know what the future is for us. The future is we're going back to work, we're going back to school.
Yes. So here it says that, like, having a good painting of the future or a good belief of the future is super, super important. And this is how people follow leaders. Like, you want to follow someone who seems to know what they're doing. Like, they know the direction they want to go.
Right.
So that's really important. So here it goes on to say, we don't have to like them. We can even really dislike them.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you work for someone like Elon Musk, he seems to have, I don't know him personally, but from what you read and what you see in the media, he seems to have a very abrasive personality.
Mm.
Like, he's not someone that is easy to get along with, it looks like.
Right.
And then so if you work for someone like Elon Musk, you might not like him at all, but you still admire his belief of the future. Like, you believe that he will bring you to a better future. And so here it says that we don't need to like them. We can even dislike them. But if they make us believe tomorrow will be better, we'll follow and often forgive their flaws. Peter, flaws.
Flaws,
yeah. What are some common flaws you think that leaders or humans have?
Oh, common flaws that human leaders have. Arrogance, certainly probably the number one flaw for leaders because they are in a position of power.
Mm-hmm.
And arrogance is always the fatal flaw of those in power. Short-sightedness, flaws, short-tempered, maybe don't manage their emotions very well, maybe don't communicate very well, maybe have certain views about certain kinds of people that they don't have about other kinds of people based on gender, based on race, based on economic status, all kinds of human flaws that, you know, show up in leaders too, because leaders are humans too.
That's right. So here it says that even with some leaders have really serious flaws, but many followers are willing to overlook it because these leaders can paint a vision of the future. And I would also like to add, sometimes it's because working in those companies, you get paid very well.
Right.
So it's not just about a vision for the future. It's your company, that company's stock is doing very well.
And you know, it's not even really a vision of the future, because that would be strategic vision, one of the essential competencies that the author said not all leaders have. It's more just the way he phrases it in this last paragraph here. If they make us feel better about the future, if we believe tomorrow will be better, not necessarily what it'll look like, but just that things will be better tomorrow, then we will follow that leader.
That's a very, very interesting point. And we'll definitely dive into this a little bit more tomorrow about the one thing about having a better future, and then also talking more about the followers, not just the leader. Because today we spent a lot of time talking about the leader, but all leaders need followers. So we'll be talking about the followers. I mean, to be able to lead well, you also need to have followers who can follow whatever you're leading. So we'll get into that a little more tomorrow. Well, friends, it's been wonderful to have you on this journey talking about leadership. And we hope you'll come back tomorrow and we can continue talking about what makes leaders great. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.